Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Word games like Wordle, Quordle, Sudoku, crosswords have long been popular, but while they might be an enjoyable pastime, how good are they for keeping our brains active? Are there benefits to keeping these kind of habits and rituals up, or do we need to embrace new, different, challenging brain-teasing activities to see the benefits? To tell us more on this, what simple tasks will keep our brains ticking over, I'm joined on the line by Dr. Sabina Brennan, neuroscientist and psychologist. Good morning, Sabina.
Good morning.
Take us back to lockdown when Wordle became particularly popular. You noted that there were societal and individual benefits to this.
Well, I suppose during lockdown, we needed a way to connect. Social connection is actually something that's really, really good for your brain. Social interaction is quite a challenging activity. And so a lot of us missed out on that during lockdown. So I suppose Wordle offered people an opportunity to interact about something that they were doing together. I mean, I think a lot of people were bragging and boasting about it, but I suppose that was giving, you know, about their scores, that was giving them a sense of social recognition and maybe a sense of accomplishment at a time when we were kind of lacking in that.
What about the actual cognitive value of doing something like this on a daily basis?
So, first of all, if you enjoy it, I think, you know, doing something that you enjoy every day is good for you because it's important to keep your mental health and enjoy life, because depression actually, you know, has negative impacts on your brain function. Playing Wordle in particular, it's unlike maybe doing a crossword puzzle, because you don't need to know the meaning of words or have a large vocabulary or figure out, you know, solutions. You're really, you know, there's a lot of kind of guesswork and strategy involved, so it's probably not as beneficial maybe as other games are, because really where we get the benefit is from you know, learning something new or learning how to do something or something that challenges us. That's kind of where we get a real benefit. So if you find Wordle has or even any other sort of game or puzzle has got easy for you, well, aside from sort of enjoyment, it's not going to harness neuroplasticity in your brain. It's in the learning. So challenging yourself, learning something, a novelty, doing new things. So when, you know, you learn a new skill, whether it's playing a musical instrument or learning how to, you know, do cryptic crosswords or those kind of things, new neural connections or synapses, that's the communication part of your brain cells. They form in your brain and they allow different parts of your brain to communicate and work together more effectively. And then the longer you practice a skill, the stronger they become. You know, there can be changes in the activation of different areas in your brain. So, for example, if you were learning to play a musical instrument, areas in your brain associated with auditory processing and motor control would improve. I mean, the thing about these kind of things is variety is key. It's a bit like, you know, if you went to the gym and just exercised your right forearm, you know, you'd grow muscle in your right forearm and the other muscles in your body might degenerate.
I was going to say here, so am I better off doing Wordle one day and then going for a long walk in the country and stimulating a whole different set of synapses the next day?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you kind of said that, because to be honest, when people talk about brain health and keeping their brain healthy, they tend to think of things like, you know, those mentally stimulating games, crossword puzzles, etc. But to be honest, one of the best things that you can do for your brain health is to exercise, physical exercise, walking. But something like dancing will give you cognitive stimulation as well, mental stimulation as well, because you have to figure out the moves and you you know, what comes next. So you're getting physical exercise and mental exercise together. So doing those kind of things are very beneficial, I think.
Does that mean then that as you start to lose your hearing, or if your sight was to become impaired, that there will also be a cognitive decline because your brain is not being stimulated in the same way that it was?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm really glad that you brought that up because, you know, if we're talking about a disease like dementia, we know that 40% of all cases of Alzheimer's disease, that there's 12 modifiable risk factors, you know, things that we can do something about, like not smoking, stimulating your brain, being socially connected, etc. But hearing loss is actually has been identified as the largest significant risk factor for dementia. So thankfully, the good news on that point is that if you wear a hearing aid, that mitigates the risk. So that's kind of a very important message to get out there to people. And, you know, I mean, when we talk about things like memory and stimulating your brain and dementia, we tend to think we should be talking to an older audience. But I mean, everybody needs to look after their brain health. Everybody has a brain, and the sooner you look after it, the better. But it's also never too late. So protecting your hearing is critical, particularly if you're wearing headphones all the time at a very loud level. That can cause hearing loss. So
that leads me on to the next point that I was going to make, is that, you know, stimulation is good, you're saying, but at what point is overstimulation of the brain a bad thing?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, our brains are brilliant. You know, they work for us 24 hours a day, but they have limited resources and limited capacity. And, you know, if you become overstimulated or overwhelmed, or, you know, information overload, I mean, your brain literally almost even goes into a paralysis. I mean, we've all had that feeling at the end of the day and you're trying to make decisions or someone's bombarding you with information and you kind of go, look, just stop. I just can't think. I can't take any more information in. And your brain literally can't take, there comes a point when your brain just hasn't got the resources to cope with that kind of information. So it's really, really important to give your brain rests and breaks throughout the day. So if you, you know, take breaks every 60 minutes, go for that lovely walk outside, get a bit of sunshine if it's out, those kind of things will help you sleep better
daydreaming.
Sleep is critical.
Bit of daydreaming, bit of getting bored.
A bit of daydreaming is, well, not so much getting bored, but a bit of daydreaming is very good because it changes the activity in your brain, switches over to what's called a default mode network. And when that happens, actually, what we think is happening is that your brain is working away, solving problems for you, coming up with ideas, giving you insights. So we put a lot of store in our conscious thinking brain. We think we consciously have to work at solving problems or figuring things out, but actually our subconscious brain has access to absolutely all of our life experiences and our knowledge. So if you put the information in, daydream, get a good night's sleep, whatever, your brain can be working away on the solution. We've all had that where you wake up in the morning, oh, that's how I'll do it.
Okay.
That's what I'll do.
So of all the stimuli that you've mentioned here, from daydreaming to going for a walk to Sudoku to getting a good sleep, where would you put in that hierarchy having a chat, social interaction?
I would put that very high up. I really would. We're social creatures. We need social interaction. Social isolation can be incredibly detrimental to our cognitive functioning because we're not being stimulated. But also social isolation can lead to feelings of loneliness and depression. Depression is also one of those big 12 risk factors. It can also lead us indirectly to engage in behaviours that are not good for us, like excess alcohol consumption to cope with the feelings of isolation. And again, excess alcohol consumption is one of those 12 modifiable risk factors. We may tend to overeat. Midlife obesity is again one of those risk factors. And similarly, when you have hearing loss, you may be inclined to socially withdraw to avoid embarrassing situations. And that's absolutely critical that you don't do that. So kind of getting, you know, your hearing checked and sooner rather than later, okay. and wear aids if you need to.
Sabina Brennan, neuroscientist and psychologist, thank you very much for that. That is all that we have time for. The programme was produced by Rachel Graham, researcher Kieran Dunn, broadcast coordinator Jarlath Holland, and on sound Aisling Grufferty. Now, just coming up to 12 o'clock, here's Ray.